Right, the Cabinet today is still working its way through the big decisions around the sustainability climate change related issues. We've now finalised, as of today, the New Zealand Energy Efficiency and Conservation Strategy, and that will be released in October as the companion strategy with the New Zealand Energy Strategy. And there's also an important discussion paper coming out from Transport on how to take the sustainability agenda forward in detail in the transport sector as well. So these three documents reinforce the decisions that were announced last week with respect to the emissions trading scheme and the associated measures for forestry and agriculture. Otherwise, at the Cabinet today, approval to introduce a subordinate legislation confirmation and validation bill. It's routine legislation. The Sentencing Council commencement order has gone to the Executive Council today. That brings the Sentencing Council into force on the 1st of November, and consistent with the decisions announced around changes in the criminal justice system in July last year, we are aiming through the Sentencing Council to get more consistent practice in sentencing across the court system, and of course to get best practice in sentencing across the court system. So a lot of work's been going on with the draft guidelines for the Sentencing Council down at the Law Commission. We've made decisions around the extension of the Kiwi Police deployment to East Timor, and King will do a statement on that. We've agreed to a discussion paper going out on the regulations which are proposed to be made under the Limited Partnerships Bill, which is presently before Parliament, Bill in Leanne Dalziel's name. We've also agreed on the content of a draft government product safety policy statement with respect to formaldehyde levels in clothing and textiles, and Judith Tizard will be releasing the detail of that. We've agreed to the terms of reference for a review of the operation of the Health Practitioners Competence Assurance Act 2003. That's under Pete Hodgson's portfolio. Also agreed to the release of a program which for 2007 to 13 called Like Minds, Like Mine, which is aimed at countering stigma and discrimination associated with mental illness. This has been quite a successful program, and this is the next stage of it being announced. We've made the final policy decisions on the major rewrite of the Public Health Act. There's a new Public Health Bill that will come to Parliament in November. Also made good progress on the proposals we've been considering to address drinking by minors, and ministers will now be consulting with other parties around that. We've agreed that a discussion document should be drawn up on whether or not New Zealand should have compulsory third-party motor vehicle insurance, canvassing the pros and cons. Harry Deinhoven is in charge of that project. Also agreed that our New Zealand police trainers in Afghanistan should formally join the European Union police mission in Afghanistan, and I'll be signing an agreement to that effect in Brussels next Wednesday. They've been working with a German police training program in Bamian province and are based at the provincial reconstruction team there, but the European Union is now taking over what the Germans were doing, and we will join formally with them in that training task. Those were the major decisions out of today. Coming up this week, I understand Pete Hodgson's had a statement out, or will have today, around increasing numbers of operations for elective surgery being done, which is encouraging. It is education sector conference season, so you'll find the Minister of Education making speeches across the early childhood NZEI and PPTA conferences in the course of the next few days. Understand the new electoral boundaries will be formally released tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll be opening the new prison at Spring Hill in the mid-Waikato, Mary Huntley, Mercer area. We have also on Wednesday the symposium here in Parliament on Dominion Day, which I'll say a little bit more about in a moment. The sod turning for Meridian's new Makara wind farm on Thursday, which I'll be taking part in. Come Friday, Steve Mahari will have out the New Zealand Schools Report for the past year, which deals with issues like student achievement and how New Zealand compares internationally. And also in the course of the recess, I'm expecting Trevor Mallard and other relevant ministers to be talking about the proposals we've agreed on with respect to disposing of Crown land. There were issues much earlier in the year which threw up considerations about Crown land disposal, so we've done a lot of work on that as well. Now, come the end of the week, I will be leaving for the working week in Europe, which involves 2 days in London with formal meetings. Gordon Brown and other people, plus the day in Paris where I'll meet the new French president, a day in Brussels for meeting with the European Commission and with the high-level representative on foreign policy, Javier Solana. Also be meeting with the NATO Secretary-General. We are, of course, doing more with NATO in Afghanistan, so we like to keep abreast of their thinking on that. I will be meeting with former Prime Minister Tony Blair in his new capacity as the envoy for the quartet of the UN, EU, US, Russia on the Middle East. Come Sunday in London, we have a ceremony at the graveside of former Governor-General and World War II Kiwi military commander Lord Freyberg. The gravesite was in some disrepair and the New Zealand government has paid for substantial refurbishment. And I will be doing speeches at the Oxford Union and Southampton University while in the UK as well. Then Thursday next week is the Passchendaele commemoration. I think people are well aware of the significance of that to New Zealand. The day we engaged in the Battle of Passchendaele was New Zealand's worst ever military disaster in terms of lives lost on a single day. So it is a very important occasion for New Zealand. The 4th of October is an Anzac commemoration. Kiwis were committed to battle preliminary to the advance on Passchendaele itself on the 4th of October, and it was also very costly in terms of loss of life. In Paris, apart from meeting the President, there will be functions around the opening of the giant rugby ball, and tourism and trade and corporate leveraging function there. I'll also be depositing our accession document for one of the UNESCO treaties at the UNESCO headquarters. And then come Saturday, it will be across to Cardiff for a certain event that evening, and also to be part of the New Zealand Trade and Enterprise leveraging event around the Rugby World Cup, which we're doing in Cardiff. The symposium this Wednesday marks the centenary to the day of Dominion Day, and that was the day, 26 September 1907, that the Prime Minister Sir Joseph Ward read the proclamation on the steps of Parliament's General Assembly Library announcing that New Zealand was no longer a colony of the British Empire. So we thought it was a significant anniversary to reflect on, and in addition, this year is the 60th anniversary of New Zealand ratifying the Statute of Westminster, and that ratification removed Britain's right to make laws for New Zealand. So it is an important year in respect of both anniversaries. We have a day-long symposium with a number of academic constitutional experts talking about New Zealand then, New Zealand now, where from, where to. I think it should be quite an interesting day, and there will be two reenactments. One is with the 1907 announcement. Parliament's General Assembly Library was illuminated between 6 p.m. and midnight, and we will be lighting up the arches and roof line on the 25th and 26th for the first time since 1937. And also we will reenact the photo of Sir Joseph Ward out on the front of Parliament where he read the proclamation with those who are attending the symposium. Any questions?
Can you give a briefing on the Duke of New Zealand man in Kenya, and will there be any upgrade and travel advice in Zealand?
I'm afraid I haven't had an update on that today. I'd like to convey my condolences and sympathies and those of the government to the family concerned. It's a very shocking thing when something like this occurs far away, and one's heart goes out to the family. Certainly it would lead us to look at the travel advisory again. I imagine that with respect to Nairobi, it already covers dire warnings about the insecure nature of the capital.
Just in regards to Prime Minister, given that he's facing some internal charges around behaviour and discipline, do you think really it's now only a matter of time before he's formally kicked out of the police?
I've always been very careful what I said about what is essentially now an industrial relations process which is being gone through. It has to be gone through extremely carefully. The police are clearly, from media reporting, and I stress I haven't had an independent brief on it, they are clearly considering laying charges under the disciplinary process if they haven't done so already. That is a very formal process as provided for in the Police Act, and it has to be approached with considerable care. Otherwise, the taxpayer is cost a great deal more money. So I think it's best to refrain from the substance of the allegations and charges at this point.
What about the police in Auckland on this A&M case? Do you think that they have been properly in their investigation?
Overall, I'm going to judge the police performance on whether there can be a successful prosecution of a person for murder, because what we have is a terrible tragedy with a young child left without a mother, family left without a daughter. It's a horrific crime. Now, obviously there are some issues for the police around why it took so long to actually investigate the car and whether it should have been considered as part of the crime scene from the beginning. Probably everybody who looks at the story has a view about that, but I'd like to hear their side of it first. Well, prima facie, as an ordinary member of the public, you'd be inclined to say that the car would have been of interest, but I think we need to hear what the police thinking around that is. In the public debate around it, some have said they should have gone straight to it, others have said they have to be very careful about the procedure which they follow, because they don't want to prejudice a later prosecution.
Were you concerned at all about the length of time it appeared to take for the Los Angeles police to be notified about this man?
Again, there seem to be a couple of schools of thought about that. The Australian police apparently did notify, I think, on the Sunday of last week. So the American police were certainly aware that this was a person of interest from that time. Then the New Zealand police followed through formally. Again, I think in the wash-up of this, we need to see whether there are lessons which can be learnt by the Kiwi police.
Regarding the legislation to deal with drunk driving, are you confident that that's going to make numbers to get through? And do you have a view on the Greens position about how you would treat drunk driving offences in relation to other drug-related?
Well, this hasn't come back up to the Cabinet or a Cabinet committee at this point. I've had my staff check with the Minister of Police on it before coming down today. She says she feels the article's a little premature. She says there's still discussions going on around support for that bill, so I really don't have any other information to offer on it.
Prime Minister, did you catch up with Valentia's comments on
I certainly did see his comments on wanting to go down a privatisation route with New Zealand state-owned enterprises on grounds that I think are just not tenable at all. Why would we want to go from having very successful state-owned companies returning a dividend to every Kiwi, to some Kiwis getting the chance to get a lot more from them than others. I don't support privatisation of our state assets. It won't be occurring under a Labor government. And I'm glad that we've finally been able to hear a bit of policy which reminds us of what really turned the public off the National Party in a big way in the 1990s.
Is it partial state assets, though? I mean, just say 20%, like Bill Evans seems to be suggesting, putting money for infrastructure.
It's a rolling privatisation. It's like a slow-burning fire sale. I have little doubt that it's one of the ways of creative accounting they'd like to use to finance tax cuts for rich people. From the Labor Party's point of view, we do not support the privatisation, full or part, of the state-owned assets, and we believe that all of the people benefit from the dividend flows right now that we're getting from what are actually not badly performing assets.
Does that mean Landcorp will never sell any more land in the future based on that?
Well, what Landcorp was doing was selling some to buy in other land. The policy the National Party outlined before the last election was simply to start quitting the farms altogether, not replace them, but quit them. Now, as you know, when it came to the government's attention earlier this year that Landcorp was starting to put on the market properties that were of considerable significance, A, for possible treaty settlement claims, B, possibly for historic and natural heritage and conservation regions, and thirdly, for recreation purposes, we said, stop, we're going to look at the whole policy around this. But we have seen Landcorp as a long-term player in the Kiwi farming scene for a number of reasons. Firstly, there's a lot of reasons why those particular properties have been in the public estate going back a long, long time. But secondly, Landcorp has been something of a leader in terms of farm management techniques and the extent to which it's prepared to pioneer and innovate. And we've seen that as a legitimate function for a state corporation. So it's quite a different approach.
So that Whenuakite property in the Coromandel, does that effectively, have you made a decision, Cabinet, that will never be sold?
We've made decisions, which Trevor Mallard and the other relevant ministers are very close to announcing. Trevor's in the UN and tomorrow, so he's not back for a couple of days yet. But we've made decisions about how we will treat sensitive properties which Landcorp proposed to sell in order to reinvest in, if you like, straight out commercial farming propositions.
So you can assume that that property won't come back on the market, because I think they still think that it might.
You can assume that we have been very sensitive to where there are historical, recreational, conservation, treaty settlement related issues around Landcorp properties.
What about Mr. English's argument that capital markets need deepening, that all the money that's going to the Cullen Fund and KiwiSaver, that New Zealanders need things to invest in, and that SOEs and state assets could be one avenue for that?
I think the key thing is to get Kiwis innovating with new and growing companies which will attract equity investment here in New Zealand. But I simply cannot see that it is any step forward for the people of New Zealand to see our public assets put on a rolling fire sale in order to enable the National Party to creatively account for their tax cuts.
What about Air New Zealand? Bill English used that as an example of a mixed ownership model. Perhaps it wasn't a great example, but is Air New Zealand one that is different from the others and perhaps could at one stage be sold?
Remember, Air New Zealand was a state-owned enterprise and it was fully privatised, and that privatisation was not, in the final analysis, successful. And the reason the government came in again as the predominant owner was that otherwise we frankly would not have had anything remotely resembling a national airline. It would have been owned by offshore interests. Now, this shows to me the limits of privatisation, where you have a need to have your national designated airline, which plays a very important role in advertising, recruiting visitors to New Zealand. It's an iconic airline for New Zealand. The privatisation did not work, and so we bought back in. Now, there wasn't really the opportunity to buy everything back in, and it's not an SOE, a lot of things might be a lot easier if it were an SOE, but the fact is there is a minority private shareholding. And I don't really want to see that replicated with assets where we do hold 100%.
Is there not a single state-owned company or asset then that you can see either selling or selling down?
No. We have, of course, gone into some joint venture activity in order to expand what state-owned enterprises do, but we have not considered any privatisations since, I think it was Terralink, effectively went under about 8 years ago.
So assets, some assets are saleable, obviously, because Meridian was able to sell some specific assets, but not the company's ownership, is that what you're saying?
Well, Meridian had made a very, very profitable investment in Australia, and it was then given permission by shareholding ministers to quit that investment because it brought money back onshore, and Meridian had very, very big investment plans here, not least in renewable energy. So that was seen as a substantial asset management issue in the public interest.
Prime Minister, could I ask you about the sponsorship of the parliamentary rugby team? Do you have any thoughts on Mr. Tony O'Brien from Sky going out and raising sponsorship for MPs that show they can tour the fronts?
I have seen the item in last week's Independent, and it does raise some issues for me. I intend to refer the item to the Speaker for her to consider and then discuss with others as she sees it appropriate. Of course, MPs must now declare in the Register of Parliamentary Interests, I understand, where they accept gifts from others. And clearly sponsorship for a private trip is a gift. But whether that entirely deals with the ethical issues involved is another matter.
So you're asking you to make a ruling or a judgment on whether this can carry on in the current state?
I'm going to refer it to her for her to consider. I think that's the appropriate place for it to go.
What do you think, Prime Minister, that there was a number of people on that trip who really had nothing to do with the rugby team at all? Hmm. I mean, 39 people made the trip.
Can't be all physiotherapists, can they? Although by the level of injuries, maybe they were.
Mr. McCulley was also quoted as saying, Prime Minister, that the strip was at no cost to the New Zealand taxpayer, but just following on from the New Zealand theme raised earlier, I mean, Air New Zealand was one of the major sponsors along with Visa, McDonald's and AMP. I'm just wondering whether you had any thoughts on Mr. McCulley's comment that the trip was made at no cost to the New Zealand taxpayer.
Well, clearly if it was sponsored by Air New Zealand, that's in effect free seats or subsidised seats that come off the bottom line. I imagine that they dealt with it in the same way as they would any other commercial sponsorship that they undertake, and they are very good as a national airline in sponsoring a range of cultural organisations and helping with airfares, and to my certain knowledge, and probably sports teams as well. But again, I think it's something that should now be formally referred to the Speaker for consideration as to whether Parliament should take a view on this.
Given how secretive it seems that most of the sponsorship was, it's hard to see how Air New Zealand was getting any benefit out of it.
This is true.
You'd expect, wouldn't you, if they were sponsoring a sports team, they'd be crying from the rooftops. But not in this case.
Especially when they won the Cup.
So why was Air New Zealand sponsoring?
I think you'd have to put that question to them, because presumably they have a sponsorship manager and department and they consider what they will sponsor, and the same goes for the other sponsors. I mean, if Sky is a sponsor, did anyone see it on any of the sports channels? QED.
How you might support Peter Dunn's bill for raising the
job range? We have discussed it at the Cabinet today, and I'll go up to the caucus shortly and discuss our thinking there. But our general view is that the bill should be introduced, and we would give it our support at that stage. And then there's a whole lot of issues which have got to be put on the table. And they're not raised lightly, the issues around, for example, the traditional use by young teens on farms of farm transport, which sometimes have to go onto the road off the farm in order to connect bits of the farm or bits of work that are being done. So there are real issues about it, and I think the best place for those to be aired now is in the Select Committee.
Would Labor consider it a conscience vote?
We haven't given any consideration to that at this point at all. What we've talked about today is agreeing that it should go forward to the Select Committee, and then all the arguments can be debated. I should say it's not a traditional conscience issue area for Labor.
Do you have any special messages for your caucus before you go away?
Work hard. All of that. I do actually, but I'm not about to reveal it.
Presumably not till you get back.
What's that?
Not till you get back. Presumably.
It won't be announced from Paris or Cardiff. I think what Duncan said is I'm not repeatable.
do you expect the announcement of the boundaries tomorrow to trigger some final decisions by MPs in your caucus about their future?
I think MPs will take boundaries into consideration when they think about the pathway forward. Yes, I don't want to single anyone out. I personally haven't really had a close look at the final boundaries at all. As you know, MPs were notified of them, I understand, informally by their representatives on the Commission a while back, but I haven't played it close attention.
Thank you.